What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio. Special Operations Military News and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Soft Rep Radio. I am your host, Rad, and with me, I have a very special guest. Now, you are probably used to me talking to somebody who's a Green Beret, who's Delta Force, Navy SEALs, and that's not going to change here. We're just going to talk about the means of transportation over the years of conflict that this device, this machine, this beast, this soldier, this warrior has been on the battlefield throughout time. And I'm going to introduce Paul, who has written a book for you to enjoy. Paul, let's talk about Jeeps.
I think I can handle that, Rad. You know, we'll see. We'll see if I live up to your usual standards.
Tell us the name
of your book. What would you like me to talk about first?
Tell me the name of your book.
No problem. I've actually written three books, what I call on early Jeep history, okay? And I define early Jeep history because I can, because it's me, right, Rad? You know, just, you know, let's make it up as we go along.
I'm so excited. Right. I'm so excited to have this conversation about Jeeps.
Yeah, no worries. So early Jeep history can be broken up into three periods: the end of World War One to October 1940, October 1940 to March of 1941, and then March of 1941 to November, December 1941, just before we got in the war, okay? And so I've written three books. The first book is called Project Management and History, and that covers the period up to October 1940 from a project management perspective. Then I wrote a second book called The Original Jeeps, and that covers the period going all the way from World War One to March of 1941. So we've got two-thirds covered in the second book, okay? And in the second book, there's three Jeeps on the front, which were the three original Jeep prototypes. And we go in both of those books into very fine detail of what happened to where someone on Amazon wrote about the original Jeeps, I'll give it clear. This is a little dry with lots of technical detail, but no book has been written that covers the creation of the Jeep and that's better, covers the creation of the Jeep more thoroughly. So then what I decided to do on the third book was to kind of make the story a little bit more accessible to people. We wrote and compiled what we call the original Jeeps in pictures. And it's an images book. And this book is the first one that covers the entirety of early Jeep history all the way where we get in when the United States enters World War II. So on the cover of this book, we have all seven of the original Jeeps. And the book is very readable. I had a friend say they could read through it in an hour. So we've got three
enjoyable
books.
Enjoyable.
And again, the new book, which we'll spend a majority of our time talking about, just wanted to make the story more accessible to more people that they could find out what happened through the images. And then if they want to go into the detail, they can purchase the original Jeeps. So that's kind of the overall story of the books.
Okay, that's awesome. And so it's awesome. See, the reason why I was so excited to have you on the show today is because, you know, a lot of folks don't understand that Jeep and Ford and, you know, Ford Willie's Jeep had this relationship back in the day to try to get government contracts to go mechanized, right? So we're trying to get, you know, beasts on the battlefield other than horses. And they're like, we need something that can, you know, take a beating, you know, fit some troops, take wounded. How can we get wounded out, you know, by using litters on the front of the hoods? I mean, you know, let's talk, right? Let's get into it because, you know, the Jeep is combat ready in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, so that's absolutely 100% correct. And so the overall story is, as you stated, right around 1940, the Germans were marching across Europe full, you know, much more mechanized, modern for that time, armies. And the United States realized, we need a vehicle to replace the mule and the motorcycle with sidecar for all the things you wanted to talk about. And in May 1940, they had exactly nothing. Nothing. And nothing on the drawing board. Nothing.
Right.
Zip. Nada. And that was literally 2 weeks. They realized this 2 weeks at a meeting, 2 weeks after Hitler invaded the West in May 10th, 1940. And then through an amazing, miraculous set of circumstances, which people don't really know about, and that's why we've wanted to document in our books, the Jeep came into being between that time in May and delivered the first one in September 23rd, 1940. And then a miraculous story. It's literally
pretty quick.
Yeah. I never stopped using the term amazing. Yeah. It was really quick.
Yeah. Four-wheel drive. You know, capable of being dropped in a crate and having a small man unit that's attached to the vehicle, drop with it, airborne style if they had to, assemble it if it landed correctly and didn't break apart, and then they could put it together in like 5 minutes and they were mechanized now in some, you know, Eastern European country.
And the other thing, which is amazing, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm just like,
I was going to say, I
just love it, yeah.
Yeah, keep like, going. Whoa. Yeah, the other thing that was amazing about it is, you know, once it created, given the nature of the war was coming up, it could operate in any theater, anything from desert to Europe to the Pacific to China, Burma. It didn't matter. So that is even more remarkable that a vehicle that versatile could be created that quickly, you know, in 1940. It's just amazing.
It is. And you see a lot of these videos. You can go probably look on YouTube and find the, you know, how to assemble it. You know, there's like guys that do it as a 5 minute stopwatch type of thing, and or how it was first created. There's video where they're going over these bumps back in the day in like an old Willie's Jeep, and they've got, you know, troops in it, and he's bouncing all around, probably banging his head on the edge of the, you know, of the frame, and they're just trying to get what happens to a soldier in those conditions. So what did Jeep have to fix about that? You know, there had to be something where it's like, we got to have some suspension. It can't just be knocking our soldiers around. How did they come up with that?
If you want me to go back and tell you kind of the birth story, I think I can answer that question that way. Does that make sense?
Yes. Let's do it.
All right. Yeah. So you're in May 1940 and they have nothing. And stepping back, there was this car company that most people have never heard of called the American Bantam Car Company, which was based in a small city in 30 miles northeast of Pittsburgh called Butler, Pennsylvania. And that company had spent the entire, through various means, they had spent the entire decade of the 30s, which wasn't exactly a great economic time, by the way, in case anyone's wondering. Little thing right, called depression. The Great Depression. You know, just slight thing. So Bantam tried to build small cars for the United States, and shockingly, it didn't go well. And so in 1940, the company was bankrupt. They had no staff. They had nothing, no capital, nothing. They were just, we're going to, boom, fade into history. And they took one last roll of the dice, one Hail Mary pass, and they said, let's see if we can get some government contracts. So they hired a guy to go to Washington and rummage around, see if they could find something. Well, long story short, this gentleman named Charles Payne ends up in May 1940 in the Office of the Infantry, which had been looking for a vehicle of what we're talking about for three or four years prior. And he ends up in the office of this guy named Colonel Oseth, who literally was at this conference I was mentioning earlier, where they realized that they had nothing. This conference was held in Baltimore, Maryland, at a place called Camp Holabird, which was the Army's main depot for procuring vehicles. So this Oseth guy is at this conference in May. They're talking about this type of vehicle. They have nothing. He goes back to his office, and who's sitting in the windowsill but a guy, Charles Payne from Bantam, to try to interest him in contracts for the war. They were looking for airplane parts. Oseth comes in, says, who are you? And he's like, I'm Charles Payne from American Bantam. He's like, yeah, what are you doing here? He's like, well, I want to interest you in maybe, looking for air, because the Air Force was on the Army at the time. Aircraft parts, or we build vehicles. He goes, well, we've tested your vehicles, which you have, and they're no good. So Payne was the consummate salesman. He says, well, what can we do? What do you want? He goes, right. I know Colonel Oseth had been very involved in the tests that they had been looking for a vehicle the last few years. So keep the story short. Oseth says, I know what we want, and if you work with me, we will develop a general list of specs to start a procurement for a vehicle. Oseth says, thumbs up. And over the next 2 weeks, those two guys, primarily with other people in the infantry office, work together and create a general list of specifications for a vehicle that will meet this need that we're talking about. And that memo was written on June 6, 1940, which, let's test your history knowledge. What happened 4 years to the day exactly after that date?
D-Day. Correct?
D-Day, right? You can't make that up. It's right on the memo. No. It says June 6, 1940. Right. It's like, oh, my God. So
it's D-Day 4 years
they come up
prior.
With those, yeah. 4 years. I hope I said 4 years later. Did I say 4 years
no,
prior?
No, you did. You did. No, you did. 4 years later. I'm glad I said the right answer.
Oh, it's my bad.
Special Ed worked for me, bro.
Hey, you got it. I really wanted to try to make the question hard. Anyway, so 4 years later was D-Day. Exactly. You can't make that up. And so they now have a general list of specifications created in 2 weeks of what they're looking for a vehicle. So the journey had started. And in the original Jeeps and Pictures, one of the things we did is we included among the images the actual documents that, that throughout the procurement. And the June 6, 1940 document is in the book. I could try to show it. Do you want me to try to show it from the book?
Yeah, sure. Then the viewer that might be watching us on YouTube could take a peek at it. Right. And the listener, it's just really the documentation showing, it needs to go to war.
There it is. It probably can't see it, but there's the June 6, 19 memo, page one, right? The actual document that kicked every single Jeep that's ever been built came from that document. So people can actually read, and I included both pages of that significant document so people can read it if they want, the actual history.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine. or a ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. LifeLock monitors and alerts you to identity threats you may miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become the victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve identity theft issues on your behalf. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Why wait for your tax refund in vain? Help protect your information immediately with LifeLock. Go to LifeLock.com/news and save up to 25% your first year. That's 25% off at LifeLock.com/news. Identity theft protection starts here.
That's very significant. That's like, we need this vehicle, and that is the Jeep. And, yep. You know, my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is Jeep stands for Just Everyday Essential Parts. Like, they wanted it so simplistic to be able to build. That's one of, I've heard that acronym. What do you think?
Well, that's where they put the list of specifications down, and they did want something that was in that vein, that would be that versatile. But they really didn't know what they wanted at the time, okay? They kind of had a general idea. I can move into the next part of the story if you want to kind of try to explain that.
Get
to the point where... how to get that. So what happened after the June 6th memo came out, what Oseth had done is usually items are procured for the Army through the quartermaster, and Oseth was mad at the quartermaster. So he put an item in the specification so that this particular procurement for this vehicle would go to the ordnance department. Long story short, it goes over the ordnance department, and the ordnance department says, "We don't procure vehicles. We don't have a clue. we don't know what to do." So they go, "You know what? Why don't we go visit the Bantam plant?" So they go up and they make this decision on June 17th. And they say, "You know what? We're going to go to Butler from Baltimore." Butler on June 19th. I get my dates right here. June 19th, 1940. And so they go up to the Bantam plant because Oseth had started this, right? And they have a two-day conference. And they come up with fleshing out more of what this vehicle should be and could be, okay? And so that is a major moment. But I just love the part where, like, it goes to the ordnance department, Rad, be like, you and I having a meeting going, "Yeah, this is a, we're ordnance. We blow things up. We don't create vehicles. Hey, dude, you know, I'm not, you know, old guy saying dude doesn't work well. But, you know, hey, man, we don't do this," right? So if I could show one other, I'll show another thing from the book. So out of that meeting, now this is going to your point, right? They created a drawing, which we call the Beasley Brown drawing. I don't know if you can see it there. Let's see. How am I doing? All right, let's try this way. There we go. This page of book.
Oh, yeah.
So if you could see there.
Top side.
Now you're starting to see a vehicle, front, right?
Yeah, you're seeing the views of the drawings. You see the rear, the side, and the overhead of a Jeep on page one. And then on front, and then next to it is the front axle where it shows the grills, which that's a different Jeep. But yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
But that's going to go to your point. So that is the first drawing of a Jeep type vehicle. Now, going to your point, they wanted it to be 4-year wheel drive, right? And 4-wheel drive was very new in 1940. So what they did is they called in, that's what that next page was. There was one manufacturer who could manufacture a 4-wheel drive vehicle. They called him in, and on June 20th, they had a discussion about the axle. And that was going to be a key component if they were going to be able to successfully create this vehicle. So now you've got from literally May 20th, 1940 to June 20th, about a month, you're now starting to see a vehicle come about.
Wow.
But they still have more work to do. So it's pretty cool. So that's that part of the story.
So did he create that axle and have, what was his name? Do you know, remember his name that created the axle, the guy that had that?
Oh, yeah, I could go into that. So let me, so the axle was going to be created by a company called Spicer Manufacturing. And they were, you know, ironically located in Toledo, Ohio, the same city as Willis Overland. Okay. So we'll go through it this way and answer that question. So they go back and now they've got, the ordnance department has a little bit more idea of what they're looking for. But then the Army bureaucracy kicks in. Okay. And long story short, Oseth didn't want the quartermaster to be involved. And after they got back, by the end of June, the Army bureaucracy said, no, this vehicle is going to be procured by the quartermaster. And that's just the way it's going to be. So have fun with that. So it goes over the quartermaster. Then over the next 3 weeks from June 20th, 1940 to July 10th, 1940, about 3 weeks, they created a detailed specification and a more fuller out drawing of what this vehicle could do that they could send to a manufacturer that they could build. So in the axle, they were having the conversations about, hey, we're designing this and we need to, the axle is going to be important. So they were having conversations with Spicer about, hey, are you going to be able to create the axle? They said, we're going to have to modify a Studebaker axle. We've never done this, but we think we can do it. They eventually did do it, which will come up and later on in the story. If I can show you this next one.
Yeah, sure. No, by all means. Yeah, because I'd imagine if I was the guy. Now, this is World War II, and the effort everybody at home is to support the war effort. So everybody, like you're mentioning people from, you know, Toledo, Ohio, Studebaker, you know, you're talking about, you know, places out of Pennsylvania coming together to try to create this, you know, new American flag. I don't know how else to say it because, you know, I kind of get, I don't know, it's like not annoyed, I guess, a little, when I see an American flag on a Jeep, I'm like, why? Why are you putting that on there? What do you, I already know, bro. You don't got to sit there and, you know, flag. That is the flag to me. I see that, those seven slots, you know, boom. And that's just me personally. And being created with that in mind for the war effort, everybody at home was putting something into this machine. And so there's more to it than just probably, you know, it's a nation's idea.
Right. That's a very good point. It's already becoming a national American thing. You got Toledo, you've got Butler involved already. You have people in the Army in Baltimore and Washington, D.C. If I can show you, see if I can get this up on the screen this time better on the right-hand page. If you can see that drawing, that is the drawing that they put together. And I think you can, you might not be able to see it, but it's in the book where you can kind of see a very, very good Jeep-type vehicle coming together. Okay.
Yeah, you do. You do. You do. You can see the front wheels. You can see the wheels. Sure, sure.
Yep.
That book's going to be great. Definitely get the book.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Moving on to the next segment of the story of the Jeep's creation. I don't like to say it was invented because it was really created. All right. Because vehicles were there. The specs and everything that they were looking for, not any single one was unique. But them combined the way they did, that was unique. So the next start of the story is Banff thinks they're going to get a negotiated contract. The Army says, yeah, no, you're not. We're going to send this out to 135 companies and see who will bid, and we'll give people 10 days to put the bid together. Well, Banham doesn't have any staff or any resources. So they scramble, and they put together their bid, and one of the issues with the Jeep procurement was the weight that the Army said this thing's going to be is 1,300 pounds, okay? Mm-hmm. And how did the Army now, this is what I was a project manager. This is where requirements are hard, Rad. They didn't ask anybody that was actually going to build the vehicle how much it should weigh. So they just came up with 1,300 pounds saying this is going to be between the half-ton truck and a motorcycle sidecar, so it's going to weigh 1,300 pounds. All right? So Banham has to scramble, puts their documentation together. They go down to Washington, D.C., and they have a meeting. And the engineer that was they had hired to help them put the documentation together had put in 1,800 pounds for the weight on the bid form. Well, Charles Payne, who I mentioned earlier in this late night meeting, literally blows a gasket.
Yeah.
Says you can't put 1,800 pounds in there because they'll just say no because it's overweight. So they actually had to call the stenographer in the middle of the night, retype the forms, and put in the weight of 1,273 pounds. They just basically lied because they couldn't build – nobody could build the vehicle for 1,300 pounds. So no. Here you – and they just showed – and they got the bid forms retyped up literally – you know, within an hour or two before they had to show up at the meeting on July 22nd, 1940 at 10 a.m. Can't make that stuff up. I just love that fun.
That's wild. And they're willing to say, you know what, 1,800 pounds though, right? They're just saying 1,275.
They're just saying 1,275, 1,273. Yeah. They knew they couldn't build it for that. But you know what? Banham was bankrupt. So if they didn't get the contract, who's going to care?
Exactly.
You know, they're going to go bankrupt. So, you know, they're pulling out all the stops. So I'll finish up that segment of the story. So they go to the meeting and there's another bidder there. Actually, there was four. Ford came. They said, we won't bid. And I'll tell you why in a second. This is a key part of the story. There was Crosley came. They said, we can't bid. I'll tell you why. Willis came in and they had a time of materials and a handwritten bid because they didn't have a lot of time to put together. And Banham had a fully typed, beautiful bid with documents. So the quartermaster representative named Colonel Laws looks at everything, says, I'm going to go back. We're going to talk about it. It's like the old car dealer, just the car dealership thing. We're going to go back in the back and talk about this with the supervisor.
Right.
Well, come on, tell you how it happens, right?
Yeah.
Here's what the manager has to say.
So he comes back in.
And he says, well, after looking at it, Willis has the low bid. And Banham is like, they almost hit the floor and faint, right? Then he goes, but Willis says they can only build the vehicle in 75 days, and the Army had stipulated they had to build the vehicle in 49 days. And everyone considered that impossible. It was impossible. But Bantam didn't care. They said, yeah, we can build it in 49 days. No problem. Yeah. Thumbs up. So Bantam gets the contract.
Yeah,
but that's right. How they got the contract.
It's like, crazy.
Are you kidding me? You can't make this up. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, someone's going to do it.
Detail.
Someone has to make it. And if he's not going to try, if he can't do it, then who's going to do it? If the Army's demanding it, Army is very demanding and wants everything for nothing. And this dude has put everything on the line to try to get this contract. And they're now teasing him with other distributors, like Willie Ford. You know, he's like, brah.
That's right.
He's like, brah, I brought this to you. Like, what are you doing to me? So continue with Bantam, please.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay. Please. So then what happens is Bantam gets the contract. They finalize the contract. And by August 5th, 1940, so Bantam has 49 days to do the impossible. The betting in Detroit was 5-1. They wouldn't get it done, right? Now, the people at Bantam were amazing, amazingly mechanically, amazing engineers, but they had some staff there, which we won't go into, but it's in all the books, that they were mechanical geniuses. So long story short, they build the vehicle. Circling back to your excellent point, Spicer delivers the axle on September 15th, 1940. Okay.
Yep.
So Spicer comes through with the, I think I could use the word revolutionary axle. Bantam finishes up the vehicle on September 21st. Oh, and I forgot to mention. So 49 days from August 5th is September 23rd, 1940. Okay. So they finished the vehicle just putting it together. Okay. On September 21st, 1940, they test it a little bit for a day. And they drive it to Camp Holabird on September 23rd, 1940, the literal 49th day, and pull into the depot at 4:30 p.m. on half an hour before the deadline. Literally right out of a Hollywood story. It's like, are you kidding me? Again, I use this term all the time. I talk about early Jeep history. Can't make this stuff up. So Bantam came through and they got the vehicle built and delivered it. On the 49th day, they did the impossible. So that's going to your point about people see Jeeps, love Jeeps. Yeah, they don't realize that this amazing vehicle that's been around for 80 years was created in a miraculous fashion in 49 days. And I don't use that term lightly. So that's pretty cool. I love that part of the story. So
no, that is it's a wonderful part of the story. And so talk to me more about how, you know, now they got the axle. They've got the, you know, the contract. It's been delivered. How did they decide on the slots on the front of the Jeep? Where did that come from?
Well, the slots on the Jeep, if you look at the original Jeeps, the first two, the Bantam. So Bantam named their vehicle the Bantam Reconnaissance Car. And the Willis Quad, they had a rounded hood, and I don't remember how many things they had. Where the 7-slot grill came about, that actually came out after the war when Willis wanted to build civilian Jeeps. And they had to differentiate their Jeeps. So they made the 7-slot grill and patented it or copyrighted it, whatever the right term is.
Trademarked.
So that's where the 7-slot. So you'll see a lot of the Jeeps in the war, they didn't have 7 slots. Okay.
They had like 9 or 13. Didn't they have like 9 or 13 slots?
I don't know
exactly. And that was Ford Willis.
I don't know exactly.
Jeep. Yeah.
Right. The Ford, it was the Willis Jeep and the Ford Jeep. Let me talk about a little bit about what happened after they delivered the vehicle.
Yeah,
We'll talk a little bit about Willis and Ford. So
yeah, go for it.
What happened after they delivered the vehicle? So now you got to understand that they built this vehicle, just barely got it built and delivered, right? They're not delivering it to a group that's going to be like, you know, I think we'll, you know, take it easy on it, see how it works, gentle. No, they're going to try to break it in every way possible.
Yes.
And the Bantam vehicle, for six weeks, they tried to break it. It bent, but it didn't break. And by the end of October 1940, the Army accepted the ban on BRC and ordered another 70, which was in the original contract, and the Army had a vehicle. And that's what I always find amazing about the story is how good were these guys that they could create that vehicle in a miraculous time and so well that it stood up to the toughest testing any vehicle would get from the Army. Again, that's another great story.
It really is, because you got neighbors trying to help neighbors, because the young men that are going to war are depending on these. And those are the young men that were neighbors to these men that work in the factories, women. back in the day. It's crazy. Yeah. World War II was a unique time that my grandfather lived through, you know, and served in the Navy and whatnot. And so I just know that talking to him before he passed away, it was just everybody was all hands, you know. It was a really cool time. And knowing right. the Jeep comes from that.
Exactly. So one of the things we could talk about is how Willis got involved was, this is another one of those things of the story. After they didn't get the bid in July, the Army cut a side deal with Willis and said, if you build a vehicle on your own, because we're wonderful people, we'll take a look at it. Sure. If you build it on your own and at your own expense. So Willis built their prototype at their own expense. And then October 1940, so this is where we can get people together, where how did you get Bantam, Ford, and Willis? In October 1940, the Army went to Ford. Actually, literally, the quartermaster approached Ford and said, would you build a prototype? Ford said, sure, why not? So by the end of November 1940, the Willis and Ford prototypes were delivered in November 1940. You had your three participants that you mentioned, Bantam, Willis, and Ford, in the mix. Yeah. And so that's kind of in the brief version. And then again, that's detailed in the original Jeeps and the project management history in the first Jeep. And we have, you know, images and detail of that in the original Jeeps and pictures. So by the end of November 1940, now you have three prototypes. And the next part of the story I can briefly talk about, it's kind of literally a melodrama. So between October 1940 and March of 1941, the Army, when Bantam delivered the vehicle and was accepted, they said, yeah, now what do we do? And yeah. then November 19th, then now we have three, you know, the making it up as they went along thing. They go, oh, now we have three vendors. So through an amazing set of circumstances that are detailed in the books, they ended up offering contracts to all three vendors for $1,500, with Ford's and Willis's contracts dependent upon their prototypes being accepted. Sure. In January 41, the Ford prototype was accepted, and they started building their 1,500. Bantam was already building their 1,500. Willis, the quad, actually failed the testing. And through another amazing set of circumstances, they were reinstated and given their 1,500 contract anyway.
Well, let me ask you something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Where's this axle at now that Bantam had? What about the axle? Are they all working with the same individual to get that axle, or has Ford now?
That is that's a great question. They all had to work through Spicer.
Yeah.
So you have three manufacturers competing for this vehicle, and they're all getting their axle from the same supplier. Yeah. Another one of those ironic quirks. Hey, man.
It's like Dr. Pepper.
Why are you giving the axle to them? Yeah. Right. Why are you giving the axle to them? So the Bantam, Willis, and Ford prototypes all had a Spicer axle.
Yes, they did.
Because that was the only one that could build it. And going to your point about it was an American vehicle, not so much Ford maybe, but Bantam and Willis, they used a lot of off-the-shelf parts. And those parts lists are actually in the books. So they came from everywhere. So again, the American vehicle concept that you were talking about already being built into the DNA of the Jeep.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it is. Yeah. It's Jeep. Jeep life. It has its own hashtag that trends all over the world, you know, on social media. Hashtag Jeep life. You know?
It's now, unique. And the vehicle they drive.
Those three guys are involved, three companies. And you've got Spicer with his, you know, unique piece of the puzzle, honestly, that allows all the wheels to move, you know, at the same time for snow, mud, wet terrain, steep terrain. It's a climb. It's trying to be a mule, which a mule can climb a mountain. It's trying to be a pack horse, which can haul a lot of gear and be quick and haul troops at the same time and weaponry. So when did they start getting into like the testing weaponry phases with like, tell me.
Well, that's a pretty good question. How about we throw a camel in too for the desert?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So it's going to be a camel too. And, you know, I can't think of anything from the jungle that it might, you know, we could relate it to.
Oh, lion.
That actually is the
lion.
Perfect.
No, let's call it a lion. The rivers, the river, you know, the Nile.
Right.
The Amazon, you know, excuse me.
The Amazon. You know why we can do that, Rad? Here's why we could do that. Because it's us. It's our interview. Yes. We do what we want.
Yes, it is. No, so it's true.
Your question is the perfect segue into the final third of the story.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
So 1941 was dominated by four events. And the first is exactly what you said. The Army said, okay, we've got three vehicles. We're sending it around the country, all three vehicles to be tested. So I've called 1941 the year testing. They tested them thoroughly. In July, they said, you know what? Now, the original contract with Bantam in July 1940 was for 70 vehicles. I don't know if they really knew how big this war they were going to go into was. Next thing you know, literally a year later, and with the expansion of the war, then July 1941, they said, we have enough information. We're going to go out for another bid. 16,000 vehicles, winner take all. 16,000. It was like a $12 million contract, which was real money back in the day, right?
Huge.
That's real money now.
Huge.
So
it is. It's huge.
They send it out. Yeah, huge. You're starting to get the kind of expenditures that was going to happen for this war. So Bantam, Ford, and Willis all bid, comes out, and the quartermaster says Ford is going to get the contract. And everybody says now that knows a little about the history says, well, wait a minute. Willis built the vehicle. The quartermaster had to send the contract up to a higher level for final approval. And that higher level said, no. Willis has the best vehicle at the lowest price. Willis will get the $16,000 contract. And they did. And the quartermaster was furious they were overruled.
Oh, yeah, right.
The bureaucracy. So that is another one of those little gems in the story of, we didn't have the Ford GP, we had the Willis MB. Can I tell you how we got the Willis MB moniker?
Yes.
Yeah. Real quick. So
yeah, please.
After the Willis quad had failed, Willis went back and did an amazing job retooling their vehicle. And they had it done by May, June 1941. And they renamed it the Willis MA for military. And here, let's see if we get this question. Why do you think they called it A? It's not that hard.
Assault?
What? No. A is the one of the alphabet.
The letter?
A is the one of the alphabet. It's a letter, but it's the first letter. It's the first letter. I stumped you. So the point is, you got to love how simplistic this stuff is. Where did the MA come from, right? We'll just call it military, and we'll just use the letter A because it's the first letter of the alphabet.
MA, yeah, exactly.
So what happened? You know, MA, right?
Yes,
and they only built 1,500 of these. So why I'm bringing that up, fast forward to the story, Willis gets the 16,000 contract, and the Army, working with Willis, made a lot more, even more changes. than they already had over the prior year. And by the time they got done with all the changes, Willis said, you know, this is so significantly different. So I think we'll call this version the MB, because that's the second
right,
letter.
The second letter.
So that's how you got the name, the second letter of the alphabet. So yeah. Right. So that's how you got the Willis MB moniker, the legend of World War II. And that's how you to the Willis MB. Why don't I finish up the last part of the story, the fourth part of the story, and that'll that'll have the complete picture for people. So the last part of the story is Willis now has the MB. They have a contract for $16,000, and the Army goes, now it's later in 1941, the war's approaching, things are really deteriorating. They go, we're going to need a lot more of these, and we probably should have a second supplier. So the Army went to Willis and said, we have a deal for you. It was a Godfather deal. They said, you know what? I think Ford should build your vehicle under license, because they want it to be standard, but they wanted another manufacturer. And they basically went to the, Willis and proposed that. I like to go, it was an offer they couldn't refuse. Willis said, sure, no problem. We got a deal for you.
It's a car deal.
They can build our it's a car deal.
Listen to this.
Willis only really needed this work. And there also was probably a sense of patriotism in there. So
yeah, for sure.
The licensing contract was signed. Ford's now going to build the Willis vehicle under license. And Ford had named their vehicle, the original vehicle, the Pygmy. Then their improved version in 1941, they called the GP. The G stood for government, and the P stood for a wheelbase of 80 inches. So what they did is, once they got to the point they're going to build the vehicle under license, so people understand where the Ford GPW came from, which was built for the war, that stood for GP Willis. So that's how you got GPW. So now we're at the point where, we're at the point in the story. The early Jeep history is completed, and you now have the Willis MB and the Ford GPW ready to be built for the war. And they built over 600,000 between the two of them for the war.
Wow. They pumped those out. That is a lot of Jeeps.
They did.
A lot of Jeeps.
They did.
I'll tell you, that's a commercial run. You know, like what they did right there for a few years. What was that span? What was the time frame of the 600,000? Just the war?
Just the war.
Just the war.
1942 through just the war.
Just like a 2 to 3 year span was 600,000. So 200,000 a year they were pumping out. That's why they wanted Ford. That's why they said, hey, we're going to license this through Willys. The Willys created it. Ford, we need you to help produce this because, you know, Hitler has to die.
Yeah, and the Japanese need to be beaten.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. And so we have this Jeep now. It's been deployed. It's all over the place. I have a friend who lives in England around the London, outside London area. He has the Jeep over there. He has a regular Jeep Willys. Tricked out, drives it through the countryside. It's windows down. It's green. It's exactly what it is. He's like, anytime you're over here, I'll take you for a ride in it. Paul, this is a shout out to you and your Jeep over in England, my friend. I just want to let you know we're thinking about you. But it's literally in England still, right? And I'm like, you know, over here we have a, you know, I think of the desert rats back in the day for the SAS running in the desert with their pink, you know, Land Rovers with their windows down. Those, you know, the CBs. Having that, you know, the grates on the sides of their vehicles and such, you know, and then you have the Army showing up with theirs now, right? Here it is. It's able to work in Africa. It's able to work all over every continent is what they tried to get it to. All around Jeep. That's what's up. So now the war effort has happened. We've picked and pulled everybody's parts off of the different shelves from their stores. The war's now won. Victory has been announced. Jeep does what?
Well, the good news is, for your listeners, is my area of expertise is early Jeep history.
Yes.
So my expertise ends when we enter the war. There's many other people over the last 80 years that have covered the war and after the war in great detail. But no one, as I mentioned, that review on Amazon about no more thorough book has been written about the creation of the Jeep than my books. And that's what people can find out in detail and all this amazing history. But, you know, what happened was, though, I do know generally what happened, okay, so I can answer your question, is, and going to your point, because of the war, So you have a quintessential American vehicle. It goes to war, and it becomes the quintessential vehicle for the world just through the war. And then what happened after the war, I have a brief epilogue. What happened after the war, Ford said in 1945, we're done with Jeeps. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Willis wanted to build vehicles for the civilian market. They tried. Willis eventually faded into history in 1963. The Jeep didn't. And Bantam basically after 1940, because they did not get the Bantam built 2,670 Jeeps. And after that, they never built another vehicle. And they went bankrupt in 1956. And so, but the Jeep brand, what they talk about the Jeep brand, and so you've seen all the various types of Jeeps over the decades.
You know,
Willis Jeep. And then I like it always, it cracks me up. AMC actually owned the Jeep brand. You remember AMC?
Yes,
American
I do.
Motors Corporation. You might be a little too young for that. You know, I always bring that up. The Pacer, one of my favorite cars from my childhood when I was a kid. So the point is, the Jeep brand, they call it the Jinx, but they just, it has literally been bought out and changed hands almost every 10 years since the end of World War II.
Interesting.
Every 10 years just gets bought and changed out. Yeah, it's interesting.
So right now it's like Daimler
Chrysler. That's kind of an overview of what happened.
I think that's what it is. I think it's Daimler Chrysler.
Well, right now, let me see if I can go through the lineage here, at least off the top of my head. So you had Willis had it.
Because you also know Daimler Chrysler is making the M1 A1 Abrams.
Right, exactly. If my memory is correct, Willis had it after the war. They got bought out by Kaiser, became Kaiser Willis, eventually Kaiser became trucks. The Kaiser Jeep.
Yeah, the Jeep. Right? Yep, that's
so
right.
So then
right.
Kaiser got bought out, I believe, by AMC. All right. And AMC had it for a while. And I think after AMC, it went to Chrysler.
Yeah.
And then Chrysler went to Daimler Chrysler. Then Chrysler went bankrupt. Daimler Chrysler went bankrupt and became Cerebus Capital Management. Remember that one year? Cerebus Capital Management.
Yeah, you're diving
whatever
in there,
that means.
You know.
Build a vehicle.
You're the man. Right. This dude is the man.
And then in the late 2010s, they shuffled all the deck again and said, now we're going to be Fiat Chrysler.
That's what it is.
Automotive,
yeah,
FCA.
Right.
Then I think that the most recent reshuffling was, we're going to take Fiat Chrysler FCA, and we're going to merge that with Peugeot, and we're going to call it Stellantis. So the Jeep brand is now under Stellantis, if my memory's correct.
That's interesting. Now, I'm so excited to have you on, Paul, to talk about the birth of the Jeep. And I just want to bring up that I do own a Jeep, right? And I'm just sitting here listening. And I know that the CJs, which is the civilian Jeep, which is after the Willys market, with the round headlights, you know, started to have kind of like, you know, a hunting, you know, application to the civilian. And then you started seeing the Jeep, you know, go from the war to maybe, you know, government auction or surplus. And then people were driving them around the town, you know, for everyday grocery pickup. And so they started to say, okay, well, the CJ is a hunting vehicle. And so it had some rollovers because more civilians are taking them out, climbing up hills and rolling the Jeep, right? So now you have roll bars installed inside of the Jeeps, the whole nine yards for that safety factor. But in the 80s, Jeep wanted to change that whole dynamic. And you know about this, right? How they changed their headlights.
You can go into it. That's not my area of expertise.
No, let me explain. So the 1986 Jeep comes out because they call it the YJ. So they go from the CJ to the YJ. And the reason why they go from the CJ, civilian Jeep, to the YJ is because they wanted a Jeep that was more city-friendly, urban-friendly. Someone in New York City might want to drive the Jeep to a dinner. So they wanted to make the YJ. And the YJ stands for Yuppie Jeep. So what they did was they said, we have this huge decline in sales because of the rollover fact. A lot of folks are rolling. So someone in their marketing team, now correct me if I'm wrong, someone out there on the internet, go ahead, come at me. They said, I got an idea. Let's change the Jeep because it's square with square headlights. And so they changed the headlights to being square with the Jeep. So when you look at it, it doesn't look like it wants to roll with round headlights. And so the marketing team said, oh, okay, well, let's see if this works. So from the time of like 1986, 87 through 93, 94, before the TJs came back with the round headlights, Jeep sold around 780,000 Jeeps. It was the most Jeep production sold because they said, hey, square equals flat equals no rolling. Then what did they do once they got rid of that whole rolling debacle was they went back to the round headlights in the TJs, and all the current Jeeps today all have the round headlights. And so, you know,
there you go.
I just was wanting to have that tell you that. I know that.
That's great. That's great history. And the thing is, that's what's really wonderful about the Jeep story. I go into, you know, the early Jeep history in detail and then in images in the current book. But there's so, it's such a rich history. There's so yes. much of those types of stories and out there on Jeep history that if a person wants to learn more about it, they want to learn about early Jeep history, they can purchase my books. And there's other books that go into all that type of history too. So it's a wonderful area of history, the Jeep for sure.
It really, now Paul Bruno, ladies and gentlemen, tell me your website about where we can pick up your book. We'll have that put in the post here so that if anybody's reading, they can click on it on the website. Tell us the name of your website or where they can pick it up.
Rad, I have an official name for this particular segment of our show. And that is, this yes. is the blatant plug part of the show. So
like you're in my
we
head.
Have a website. Right. Boom. We have a website called originaljeeps.com. You know, I'm kind of an honest person. We haven't updated it for the current book, The Original Jeeps and Pictures, but there's a lot in there for the first two books, Project Management and History and The Original Jeeps. My books are available at amazon.com exclusively. Other okay. than if people want to purchase a autographed copy, they can go to dispatchermagazine.com/books. dispatchermagazine.com/books. The original Jeeps right now is available for autograph. We're working on the site to get the first book, the Project Management and History book, the first Jeep out there for autograph. And obviously you want to get the current book, The Original Jeeps and Pictures, out there for autograph. So hopefully that'll be out and available for autograph copies through that particular website by the time this show drops.
I need one of those. Yeah. It should go up on a Thursday in about a week or two. But yeah, I definitely want one of those as well so I can have that in my collection. I'll have to get one of those.
Yeah, if you want an autograph copy, go that route. If people just want a regular copy of any of the books, just go to Amazon.com and type in the title and it'll come up and away you go.
You know, Jeep has, you know, its own culture, its life. You know, there's many crews and clubs out there. I'm a part of the Utah Jeep crew here in Utah. And it's just like you get together with your Jeeps and everybody says, what's up? And you see all of us come together. And I think that the Jeep community throwing up a peace sign whenever they see each other is just so unique. You know, it really is. You know, that's the way it is, you know, when you drive a Jeep. And so I'm excited to see the future of the Jeep with the 4xe that's coming out. You know, we've gone from, you know, World War II to multi-fuel, electric Jeeps. And so, you know, here in Utah, they're always doing rock crawls down in Moab. And the other day I was reading somebody's review of it, and they said that their Jeep was just so quiet. It was just going just great. The 4xe, climbing everything fine. It just wasn't as loud as the Jeep in front of it. So
right.
It's quite an interesting, you know, growth that the Jeep. And now there's new little Jeeps and they got all sorts of Jeep lines, right? Like you said, like Fiat and, you know, how they're all this other company. But I guess I just get excited about Jeeps. And to my listener that loves Jeeps, go buy Paul Bruno's book. Do it. Tell him Rad sent you. Get the autographed copy. Paul Bruno, you've been a pleasure to have on the show. As always, I want to say thanks to my dad who hangs out on the wall behind me and that American flag with his beret. And I hope you enjoy the fire. We'll always have it on for you, Paul. Thanks again for being a part of Soft Rep Radio.
Thanks for having me, Rad. I really appreciate it. Really enjoyed the interview. Thanks a lot.
All right. Very cool. And my name is Rad. And if you got any comments, suggestions, or you want to be on the show, just send me a what's up through the Soft Rep. Hey, I got a question and I might just put you on the show. No problem. All right. Well, my name is Rad. If you got any questions, I'll just talk to you about them later. Peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Variety is back with its annual Entertainment Marketing Summit on April 24th at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. This must-attend event for entertainment marketers will feature conversations with leaders from Netflix, Paramount, Activision, Mattel, LA Rams, Google, and more. Plus, an exclusive keynote conversation with Paris Hilton. The networking opportunities are unbeatable. And once you register, you can start chatting with other registrants to plan a meetup at the lunch or cocktail hour. Limited tickets are available, so secure your spot today at events.variety.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.